Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Robert Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. Today, we are recording episode number 90, and I'm coming to you live, I guess, or via recording from the Halifax region in the Maritime in Canada, where it's very snowy, and it's we're experiencing a winter storm here. So this time I'm traveling, checking on the business across the country, and I made a stop in this area here. So I thought, what else we'll do? We'll do a recording. And I'm honored to be joined by my good friend, Atif Malik. And Atif is in Canada. And today's topic, we're going to be talking about AI from the development aspect of AI. We usually, on this podcast, we talk about AI, how AI is going to impact the translator, which is an important topic. But today, we're going to take a different spin, different look at it. We're going to look at it from the various application that AI is impacting, not necessarily from the language perspective, but outside the language industry. Obviously, as many people would know, AI's got, you know, millions of application possibilities. And today we are going to be talking about how those application development are an example. See, some of those, talk about some of those examples that are out there. Now, Atif Malik is Canada's top 100 AI startup company. He is based in Windsor, and I'll let him introduce himself. Welcome to the channel, Atif. I'm looking forward for this conversation. Go ahead, introduce yourself.
Thanks, Robin. Thank you for the great intro. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. My name's Atif. I'm the founder and chief AI officer of Zorori. We're an artificial intelligence startup, recently ranked one of Canada's top 100 AI startups. We work primarily in the healthcare sector at the moment, but we see application uses for multiple sectors, and we're going to kind of get into that as well. Just, you know, a little bit about us. We sit on the Regulatory Affairs Committee and the Environmental Protection Committee for MedTech Canada, and we have great conversations about the use of artificial intelligence and medical devices across Canada and how that is going to impact healthcare. Currently, we are working with networks of hospitals in the U.S., and that's kind of leading into a bit on our conversation and about how come so many Canadian AI startups are going down south for their business development and for their client acquisitions, right? And what's going on in Canada and over this journey. And I'm sure you've noticed a lot of the same things, Robin. We've really been, we're really seeing what our strengths are in this area. And there's a lot of area for improvement as well. And I'm hoping to get into that today with you.
Absolutely. And you know what? I am so honored to be talking about AI in Canada, because most of my conversation has been about AI. And I seem to be talking about AI always with people outside of the country. But I know there is a thriving community that is AI based in Canada. But we need to bring that to the level of the conversation that we're having today. And I'm hoping to have more and more of these types of conversations with AI experts such as yourself, Atif, in Canada. And you bring up a very good topic. Like, you know, I've been in business development in Canada for, you know, many years. I don't want to state number of years, but many years. And it sounded to me like it always been my experience, at least my experience, that anytime you want to try to commercialize an idea or you bring a new product or service, for us Canadian, it's very hard to market it in Canada. You almost have to go south of the border, create a success out of it, then bring it back inside the Canadian borders. What do you think of that?
I think from my experience, that's generally the way that myself and a lot of startups, the direction that we're headed in. Through this startup journey, I've met with dozens of startups from coast to coast, and they all have the same story. They develop their technology, R&D, and they get the initial support here from local innovation clusters that have been set up, and we've done a really good job of that. We help them test their technology and get to that first stage of commercialization. But when it comes to actually feeding the machine through the revenue it requires to get to the next stage, everyone is aiming down south to the United States, just because, you know, the sheer size of the market and the, I guess you could say, the openness to adopting new technology in the U.S. has always been a bit of a, they've had an advantage in that area. And we can go for many reasons about, you know, maybe they're more competitive because there's such a mass market and so many people are competing that there's just this, they're less risk adverse when it comes to.
Can I go on the limb out of here and say the business buyer in Canada is cheap? Can I say that?
Well, you know what? It depends. It depends. I'm not going to back that up 100%. I'm going to say, yeah, 50%. We like to stick our toes in the water before diving in, you know?
And absolutely. Absolutely. So, with all the respect to everybody, I'm just joking, obviously. There's a lot of great Canadian markets here in Canada for many innovations. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the conversation regarding business development, that's a topic for, you know, completely different session. I guess we can talk about it for 2-3 hours. But this particular conversation today, specifically on the medical side of things, MedTech, you mentioned Atif earlier. Can you talk a little bit about AI and how AI is evolving or, you know, starting to evolve? I don't know what stage you would put it in the MedTech area.
So right now, the MedTech sector for artificial intelligence or AI in healthcare is a significant area of development in Canada itself. And it is an area that is very strong, I'd like to say, because not only do we have our newly established innovation clusters for specifically for artificial intelligence, there's quite a bit of funding going into this area from those sectors. And we're doing a really good job of creating this environment of collaboration between our startups, our academic institutes, and most importantly, our hospitals and medical networks, where they have their own internal technology transfer units, their own, I guess you could call it like imagine a startup incubator within a hospital network that works with other startups to find potential use cases to help them commercialize certain technology that's going to help with things like patient scheduling, help with things like, translation for medical notes, help with things like early stage diagnosis for various ailments. That's kind of an area that, you know, we're assisting with as well. And what we're seeing is there's just so much innovation that's growing out of this environment that we're coming up with some really interesting products, technologies, use cases. We're solving a lot of problems that we weren't able to solve before with this technology. We have the environment to kind of stage it, but the issue comes up after you stage it and you prove it. Where is the market for a startup or even just an established business to go and actually commercialize it?
Now, in healthcare, obviously, like any other industry, there are specific drivers that are driving business decision makers to go down the road of saying, you know, I want to employ artificial intelligence in certain applications. In your opinion, and you haven't been in the industry doing this for a while now, beside, you know, cost cutting and, you know, the efficiency part that everybody is like, you know, taking a convoy down the road of cost cutting right now. So is there any other drivers before efficiency and cost cutting?
Well, it's really depends on what the outcome is. And I think that us as a consultant, it's our job to go out there and understand the client's business, right? And help them visualize what the outcomes could be with the application of this technology. And one of the ways that I kind of go about that is putting artificial intelligence and machine learning into three buckets of overarching problems that it might solve, right? So let's say the first bucket could be, can we apply, is there applications for this technology to boost personal productivity for staff, right? Let's make our staff more efficient so that we can increase our capacity and reduce cost. Kind of like what you were talking about, that's like the general, that's the general area that a lot of people are targeting because that's the lowest thing. The second is a bucket for artificial intelligence where you start getting into more complex machine learning models is a process optimization. So when we look at process optimization, is there a process that we can automate and do faster to be able to deliver a service or, you know, for various use cases that might apply to. I'll give you an example. I was actually just talking to a company in construction, and they're looking at ways to improve processes on quality control using drone technology. So how can we take drone technology, stack that with AI-driven vision systems that's trained on using those systems to detect certain issues on a job site, let's say, right? And I know it's very, we can have a whole different session about that, but this is more related to how do we improve certain processes, right? And then I think the third is, how do we use this to improve, services? So we're looking at the internal part of it with the first two buckets, and the third bucket really is, how do we use this technology to improve our services? And it's really a business exercise at the end of the day, like, what are our services? What are we delivering? And when you go through this process with a client, they end up reevaluating or reminding themselves of what it is that we do and how can we do it better. So when you look at, now you're looking at the business side of it, how do we improve our sales? How do we improve our marketing? How do we improve customer satisfaction and retention? Things like that. So those are the three main buckets that when you are a consultant in this field, that you kind of help the client understand where the applications will be and you map it out.
Yeah.
Right. And then you kind of just reverse it from back there. What do we need to do to implement the ideas we discussed in each of these buckets? So
absolutely. So what I'm hearing is you've got three specific drivers. One is improve efficiency, enhance process, and also improve the outcome in some cases. That's the last bucket that you talked about, correct?
Yeah. Yes. So, and it could be something that is, that you build custom. It could be something off of the shelf. It really depends on what the issue is.
Absolutely. Now, you know, I can't help but to think, like, when we're talking about AI deployment in general, specifically in the medical field, the biggest, I would say, I don't know if it's a challenge or not, but the biggest challenge would be is private data and private information and private security related to the data. Now, from what I understand, and I could be completely off on this one, the AI deployment generally uses public cloud for deployments. So what are the mechanism and how are you guys deploying some of these solutions in a medical environment, keeping in mind all the other regulation regarding private information access?
Right. So we actually have an adoption committee. And working that adoption committee helps us provide all the checks and balances with our deployment and training on specific models. We also work with some leading data scientists to make sure that some of the use cases we have present minimal risk. And if there is a risk, how do we mitigate that? So the working with the adoption committees, you want to make sure that you have people who are experts in risk management, in information technology, and sometimes even in legal. To make sure that the data you're accessing does not, or the way you're accessing the data does not breach any compliance requirements. So once that is mapped out as part of your strategy, you then want to create pilots in low risk scenarios where what we like to do, especially because we're a startup, we like to work behind our clients' firewalls, right? We don't want to move data to outside of, or to a different cloud, right? Or off of their network. This really helps protect us and it helps protect them as well. So we make sure that the appropriate consents are also given received when we are using data to train some of these models. So getting the consent that, we're gonna be using this data to train specific models, and then also what happens when it comes to the model's life cycle, right? So you're training a specific model, but what happens when you have to update it or retire it? You have to go through that consent process again for the new model, or can you take your lessons learned from the existing model to, you know, create an even newer and better one? And these are all things that, you know, come up, and this is we don't have a perfect answer for anything.
Yeah.
So what we try to do is minimize risk, because this is such a, this field is so cutting edge that we're discovering a lot of things as we go. And there is a lot of risk with that, unfortunately. But I think the way this is being, the way that the market and the industry is going, everyone is saying, let's push forward, right? As you see with, you know, the new incoming administration in the U.S., U.S. is going to be an AI-first economy.
Mm-hmm. Now, and one of the things that is very important to our client to understand here, specifically, especially what you just mentioned, which is very, very important for, at least from what I hear from my audience or from the guests that I've had on this channel before, is that deploying AI behind a firewall, behind a client firewall, that's a very, that's a very important point in my world. And in the world that I, you know, work with and talk to, it seems to be that, you know, again, like I mentioned earlier in my question to you, it seems to me like the ones that we're worried, that we aware of is deployment at, you know, not inside the firewall, outside the wall, but deploying AI inside the firewall. So I'm assuming it's got some pros and cons. You know, what are the advantages, disadvantages? Of course, higher security, but do you lose anything by putting AI inside the firewall?
Well, most of our models are fall within those three buckets that I mentioned. So we don't personally lose anything ourselves because we have full control over the environment, and we have access to resources whenever we need to scale. So I have not come across any limitations with this approach. I think because, well, we're also in the startup phase as well, right? So once we grow and our capabilities increase, we may need to have more control, right? Which will present a whole completely different layer of risk, right? But right now, I think we're comfortable working behind the firewall because we end up taking advantage of their existing security controls as well.
Is the assumption that if you go behind the firewall, if you deploy behind the firewall, your training capabilities diminish? Is that correct assumption?
I you know what? I don't think I can answer that intelligently. Just being honest, from our experience, I have not reached that or come across that limitation myself. Because the models, you can take some existing models, or you can develop custom models in Python. And if you're developing them custom and deploying them behind the firewall, which we've done, I haven't come across limitations in that. But maybe, you know, somebody with you could enlighten me and the audience on some of your experience with this.
So one of the things that, you know, let's say we're doing a model for, you know, human resources at a hospital, right?
Right.
And you've developed the model and you've trained it on their internal content. So you've dissected the internal content and you ran it through, and now the model is learning from what hasn't happened in the past, and it's going to learn from what's going to happen in the future. But that particular model now cannot really see outside of the firewall because you already have it in a contained environment inside the firewall. So if there are anything needed from outside, let's say specific pieces of data, research, documents, whatever they are, happen to be, I need a window to the outside, and I need that to be taught to the model, well, that diminishes now. That goes away because you're already in a very contained environment. I only understand company A policies. Maybe that's all you need for that particular application. I don't know. But needs changes over time, I'm assuming. Today, we're content with it being contained. Obviously, we're all learning the technology here in terms of how do we deploy it and where we deploy it and the constraints, etc. So today, we're happy with its, you know, limited deployment within a unique department. But as the technology evolves and we start needing more windows and doors to be open to the outside, I guess that would come later, I'm assuming.
That's an issue that we haven't come across yet, but I could definitely see that being a limitation as, you know, internal processes change all the time, right? And you may need access to different data for training purposes. So it would be more of an overhaul process when you're sitting behind the firewall in that case, definitely.
So Atif, let's move a little bit down to the technical side of things. Now, when you know, let's walk us through, you know, what is needed, what do you do in your case to develop a model if the model doesn't exist, or if the model exists and you want to customize it? Is this like typical programming, or is there something special for that?
So again, we look at solutions that can that are existing, or if there is a need for something more custom, we will develop in Python. And we, again, use the existing infrastructure to deploy and manage the model. So we focus a little bit more on the process side of things. So understanding what the strategy, what the outcome is, which bucket of AI does the outcome fall in, and working with the internal teams to understand their workflows, right? It's a whole exercise on looking at how is this work being completed from beginning to end, all of the steps in between, and documenting that and training your models on that. Then also understanding what type of data that these models need access to perform certain functions. I think from my experience, the majority is the data optimization, right? So once we look at what type of data these systems need access to, we figure out how can we, so let's say a human, they're working with multiple systems, and each system is siloed to be able to produce one document or one report or one insight. A model won't work like that. You need it to have access to the data in real time from a single source. So now you have to go back and look at those source data. How can you take that data and put it into a single source for the model to run optimally to perform those workflows that you are training it on? And there's various different tools that can help you with this, right? So you're looking at a very layered approach, taking the source data, connecting it with, you know, ETLs, taking those ETLs and transforming that data into, let's say, a centralized data mart that could be a data warehouse or a data lake, and then injecting that with your artificial intelligence model. So some people are, you know, they're using some pre-built models from Amazon, Watson, Microsoft. And if it's something that requires something more custom, that can always be built in Python. So from my experience, from the technical side of things, I think that we're focusing more on data management and optimizing that.
So which brings me to the data itself that you use to train a model. What's your opinion on data in general? And do you have enough? Is it good quality? Do you need to sanitize it? Does it have an expiry date that you have to work with or build certain protocols around? Can you talk a little bit about the data itself?
Absolutely. So oftentimes when we go into an environment, we see that the data is not optimal, right? But then they have requirements around, how long they have to keep certain data. So keeping all of that in mind, we have to look at storage requirements, for example, right? And what type of resources we need for that. Also looking at the data, what type of information might need to be sanitized is an exercise that we would go through with through the committee that we talked about, where you have your leadership teams, you have your risk managers, and through the ETL process, when you extract, transform, and load that data, you want to make sure that you're capturing or sanitizing that information before it hits your centralized data mart, and because that's the information that the model is going to have access to, right? I think also looking at the data, you want to be able to train the users on what that the results are going to be when they're using these models. So what type of information will be available, what type of information will not be available. And in some cases, we can reverse it where the user is using these models to inject the data back into the system, right? And how do we follow the sanitization processes and storage length requirements for that type of scenario?
Look, I'm very surprised, though, Atif, that you're using a I don't know, I'm not familiar with that type of it until we had this conversation this morning. this morning, is that you're only using a one single database to bring a whole bunch of data into it and make sense of that data. I'm surprised that you're not integrating, or we don't integrate directly with those sorts of database. I'm going to give an example. I'm an employee. I just want to check to see how many vacation days I have. I'm assuming in this case, if my vacation days are not, if my current vacation days are not in a single data system, then I'm not going to be able to get a straight answer, versus being integrated to where the vacation days are kept and or maybe our working hours or how much I'm getting paid and all that information. So that single source has to be homogenized in a single database. That's what I'm hearing, correct?
From our experience, we find that the models run optimally when they have access to single source data. But one of the things I want to clarify is we're not changing the source data or the source database. We're building layers on top of it, right? Yeah. So the source data remains where it is. Those databases don't change. When we use ETLs, that's what transfers. That's the connector between the source data and the centralized data mart. So that's where the AI is getting all of its information from, and it follows a chain from the source data. And sometimes the source data is connected through an API, for data that's required in more real-time scenarios.
So now let's switch a little bit to talk a little bit about your company, Zaruri. Just walk us through the process. What drove you to form a company, and how are you feeling so far?
My background is as a technology consultant, a virtual chief information officer, working with manufacturers, healthcare providers. I've worked with many, many different industries, and I've always played the role as an advisor, helping clients build roadmaps, and that required really understanding their businesses and where they could be more efficient, where they could be more profitable, and something I really loved doing. With artificial intelligence and being released publicly, I just saw a massive opportunity to take what I was doing and really, really help a lot of people, really enhance people's businesses and organizations using cutting-edge technology like I haven't been able to do before, even though this is a sector I'm in and I've done a lot of great work in that area. But the value that I see that artificial intelligence is going to provide is like no other. So I decided to, jump at the forefront of this.
Excellent. Well, give us an idea of the structure of the company. Do you have, where is it located? How can people reach you? If somebody's listening to this conversation, Atif, and they said, hey, listen, this sounds good to me. I want to get a hold of you guys. Tell us a little bit of information, some demographical information about your company.
So we're based in Windsor, Ontario, but we're kind of scattered from Windsor, the GTA, the United States, and we're a remote first company. And we can be reached at you can reach us at www.zarori.com. That's ZAROI.com. You can also look me up on LinkedIn.
Well, yeah, Atif Malik is on LinkedIn. I'm connected to him as well. If you need any recommendation or any introduction for my audience, please reach out to me. I'm happy to introduce you to Atif as well. And we already introduced you to a few, one. I'm hoping another one comes in my mind as well. So we'll see how that works. Trying to support and help entrepreneurs in Canada as much as I can through my podcast and through the conversations by elevating the dialogue about various topics. AI is is on top of mind for everybody now, and the conversation is all everything AI. You go to the supermarket, people talk to you about AI nowadays. It's just like I can't go anywhere without people mentioning AI to me.
Yeah, no, it's the hottest topic in tech right now. Before this, the hottest topic was cybersecurity, or it still is cybersecurity. But now you introduce artificial intelligence, and it elevates both conversations. It's an area that is producing a new field altogether. What I want to clarify that artificial intelligence is not information technology. It's something completely different. It's a field all in itself, and it's new. So I want to encourage members of the audience, don't be afraid to go out there, and experiment, but also understand what some of the risks are. Talk to people like Robin, talk to people who have some experience in this area to understand, how you should kind of go about the adoption process.
100%. I mean, one of the things that I talk about in quite a bit in some of the services that the company I work for we offer is the data cleansing part, is the data structuring and the data collection, natural language processing, all that aspect of how do you run an AI application or develop an AI process? There's the development piece and there is the support layer, if you will, on top of the development piece. This is a company like the company I work for, Linebridge, where we come in. And we're quite successful at it. It's quite globally, it's quite demanding. Everybody is in it's hungry for data, but everybody wants good data. Not every data is good data. The data that you're training your engines, I'm sure Atif can attest to that. If you have garbage in, garbage out, you're going to end up with bad processes or bad applications.
Exactly. Data is the lifeblood of artificial intelligence.
Correct. So what's next for you, Atif? I know you're developing the US market. So how's that going? Where are you thinking of taking the business next?
We are developing the US market, and we're looking at expanding on areas where we can expand that. We've carved a niche for ourselves in healthcare, but not by design. It just happened to be that we started working in this area, and there were so many opportunities to solve problems and challenges to address that we went full steam ahead and started addressing those challenges. And we saw that as an area of that we can concentrate our efforts with the most return as well. So we see the same thing in Canada, but again, it's a smaller market. Healthcare is not private. We definitely will be looking at expanding our footprint into other markets. We see a lot of opportunity in manufacturing, agriculture, construction, and quite a bit of different areas. We're just wrapping up our first year. We had a good year for a startup to be profitable in its first year. We're very grateful and thankful for that. Our team is growing. Our team is expanding. We're adding on new capabilities, working more closely with data scientists and some of the technology clusters that we had mentioned. The name of the game for us for next year is collaborate, working with organizations at every stage of their AI adoption process, whether it's a collaboration to work with them to bring something to market in a partnership, or it's a collaboration between service provider and client. We're just looking to meet new people and find out what's going on, because every day I'm seeing it's an innovation that it's exceeded everything I've seen in the last 5 to 10 years. Just the innovation that I've just seen in the last couple of years in this field. And that's only going to compound. So it's a bit of a race for us right now to stay ahead and make sure that we align ourselves with the people who are in this space. So looking at that, we're also looking at, because we've made some really good progress with the U.S. healthcare system, we're looking at other areas that are going to be that are based on that system. So MENA areas, Middle East, North Africa, organizations in those areas are areas of interest. We're working with the Trade Commissioner right now to help us make some meaningful connections and introductions, and maybe attend some trade shows in those areas and tell a little bit about our story that we meet there. And again, meeting people like you, Robin, who's very seasoned and experienced and just a well of knowledge in this field. So that when opportunities come across and I need your help or we can partner up on something, then
absolutely. That's the idea. That's collaboration, right?
Collaboration is the name of the game.
I've got to ask. Like, I'm looking at your picture here with Doug Ford. Tell me a little bit about government involvement in this industry, and is there any? And how is that working out?
Well, given that Canada's nature of a strong government presence in everything that we do, artificial intelligence is no different. And the government of Canada has done an incredible job, I would say, of having artificial intelligence startup like myself and the academic sector collaborate. They've made it so that startups like me can easily bridge those communication gaps where I wouldn't have been able to meet organizations like how I have been without some of the programs that they've had in place. So we started off by investing $2.4 billion in three major innovation clusters, three major think tanks, I like to call them. So there's AMI in Western Canada out of Edmonton. We have Vector AI over here in Ontario, and we have the Mila Institute in Quebec. And they kind of, all of them took from that pool of $2.4 billion that was our initial investment in artificial intelligence. And they used that to develop teams of data scientists, business experts, and so on, who work with startups like myself to help introduce them to these technology clusters, work with other AI startups with the goal of boosting our artificial intelligence sector. And from some of the initial progress, the research on the progress that's been made through this initiative, I guess the position that we're in as a country is that we are leading in terms of our startup and academic and R&D sectors. We're not leading in terms of being an AI economy. So this presents an opportunity, right? But it also presents a risk. The opportunity is that we're going to see a lot of innovation coming out of Canada because of the way that this has been structured, and startups like myself working with professionals in R&D, working with the academic sector, which I'm going to get into what we're doing over there as well. And then helping bring that technology to market to solve real world problems. Now, the risk is that we're a little bit slower, or a lot slower, I would say, on the adoption process as a Canadian market. So people, organizations like myself are going to look at other markets. So all that investment that has been made in the sector can easily be lost at the same time. And through my conversations with other startups, yeah, everyone is gone through the same system that I have to be able to get to the startup stage that they're at, you know, to varying degrees, but they're all focusing their business development efforts down south.
You know, it'd be great if I, you know, maybe through this dialogue that we're having now, or maybe through you down the road, is to have a conversation with those clusters directly on this podcast. I'd love to bring them on online and try to elevate the conversation in that collaboration theme that we're talking about today, with Vector, with the Quebec cluster, and the Western cluster as well. There's not much conversation going on in the circles, at least that I, you know, and I feel like I'm very well connected about what's going on in Canada. I'd love nothing but to, as a Canadian, to give that a little bit more light.
Yeah, no, definitely. I can reach out, and we can have some conversations going directly from them. I think that they would really appreciate the visibility as well, because the more that we can get the message out on the state we're in, and coming directly from them, I think it will just help our industry in general, the more we can spread that message. And I also just want to add that we've done a really great job of incentivizing AI adoption through various grants from these institutes as well. So there's a lot of public and private grants that people have access to adopt AI. I do want to take a moment to send a message to, you know, some of you industry folks out there that it's very low risk to get into this right now. And there's an opportunity here. So the opportunity in being a first mover with new technology is that you gain a competitive advantage when it's done right. Over your competitor, that could boost profitability, increase efficiency, you know, everything that you want to do as a business leader. But the risk of not adopting is that your competitors are going to do this before you and be able to do what you're doing better, faster, and at less of a cost.
And what do you say, the final thoughts, I guess, before we wrap it up, what do you say to the people who are worried about losing their job to AI? What's your thoughts on this one? I got my opinion, but I'd love to hear your opinion.
Yeah, I would say that we're not at a stage where this is a big concern yet, but it is something we have to be mindful of. the technology is advancing faster than even the experts and regulators can predict. And at the rate it's going right now, it's going to become more intelligent based on all of the data it's collecting right now. Imagine it's just one big brain that's learning, right? And it's going to learn how to do newer and better things. We're going to get there eventually, but right now, I want to make sure that everyone who's worried about this understands that this is a tool that can help you in what you do day to day right now. It will make your personal and professional life a lot better if used properly. So don't be afraid of it. Dive into it. Start experimenting with it, but also understand some of the implications of that.
Absolutely. Hey, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Final comments? I want to mention about R&D.
Yes.
I think for any other startups that are part of your audience, definitely take some time, speak to the R&D departments of various academic institutions, colleges, universities. They're coming up with some great technology that they need partners like you to help them commercialize and bring to market. And I think that's where the strength of a lot of these startups is going to be, is to make those connections and collaborate to bring those that technology to market.
And the question on R&D, I guess, I'm glad you brought it up. I just remembered. Through the cluster, is there the AI cluster of Canada? Is there a AI a credits? Is there grants? People like who are starting up, can they get some financial support from those clusters to get going?
Yes, absolutely. So there's so much support right now. There are clusters that will help you get grants for projects, so that let's say at least about 50% of the cost of your client's AI project with you will be covered by this grant. And then there's the potential, I want to stress, to stack that with other credits like SRED, SR and ED and IRAP,
yeah,
which provides another a 30% tax credit. So the barrier to entry right now for artificial intelligence is very low. And that's not going to stick around forever, though. So
the window
barrier to entry is going to get higher when the funds start to go down.
Yeah.
Now the funds are available. So don't hesitate.
Yep, absolutely. Any other topic we didn't cover today? I'd love to have you again on the channel. If I missed something, I'd love to bring you back in again and continue this conversation, though.
I would love it, Robin. And you know, I had such a great conversation with you today. One of the topics that I think we should definitely touch on the business side of things, and I think this is going to be something important to both of us, is the incoming threat of tariffs from the U.S. and what that means for Canadian-based companies and this whole ecosystem we have, like we talked about our startup and our R&D, right? So this is quite a hot topic. I think we should shed some light on.
Okay. What's your opinion on it?
I think that it is going to be very interesting. Very, very, very interesting, to say the least. And it's a clear but tricky challenge to navigate. It requires a lot of insight into our policies. Is there anything we should be doing different? How do we ally ourselves with our biggest trading partner in a way that, you know, we can have a relationship that doesn't include threats of tariffs and, you know, I almost want to call it economic warfare, right? It could be very damaging to our sector.
So do you think, like, would that shift the calculus of some of the entrepreneurs instead of establishing in Canada in a tariff war, since business development is going to happen in the U.S., I'll establish in the U.S., why would I establish in Canada?
Right. Well, we have one of our feet in the States as well, you know, and in anticipation of things like this, plus the opportunity that the U.S. Presents as well. But I also heard there was a threat of us becoming a 51st state. So
I don't know, threat opportunities, you know, it's just
a threat opportunity, depending on how you look at it, right?
Depends on how you look at it, who's sitting on which side of the fence.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just on another subject that I was hoping that we could maybe touch on as well, is the need to have a strategy before we start looking at the actual technology, right? I just completed training from the Public Policy Forum and the Mila Institute on developing AI policy and addressing, you know, creating a framework for these organizations to have for when they're looking at adopting an AI process. I think that's a very valuable tool that a lot of your audience could use to help them with their own AI adoption process.
What are you trying to do and what are you trying to achieve and how can AI help you basically? Roadmap. Well, great. And I would love, I'm sure we missed a few other topics. 45 minutes is never enough for such an interesting topic that I talk about and we talk about. You live it, actually. I talk about it every day, but you're living it and breathing it on a daily basis, Atif. I want to thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time today. And for our audience, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Atif, any last comments before we stop the recording?
No, I'm just really grateful, that Robin, that you had me on your podcast. I reached out to you and you were just so welcoming and receptive. And hey, we've had a great conversation and I think it's very valuable, to your audience. And I'm looking forward to hearing their feedback.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll forward some of those feedback to you. Generally, our audience reacts positively to AI conversation. And, and this is one of those conversation that we're having today that everybody was hoping to listen to, especially if you are in the thinking phase of becoming an AI entrepreneur. I hope you use this particular dialogue we had today as a helpful a little bit to push you in that right direction. And if you are interested in continuing in that conversation either with myself or Atif, please reach out to us. Everybody knows where I am on LinkedIn, on social media, and Atif is also available on LinkedIn, and I'll also include his website in the description of this particular podcast on my channels. And I wish for everybody a great Friday afternoon. And I also wish from everybody, if you don't mind liking, subscribing, sharing the comment on your social media, you'll do me a great favor. And I want to mention also one thing that I'm really proud of, that we're in the number top 10 podcast platforms in the language industry that we're in right now. That's where I work. That's where I belong to. And it's a thriving and growing podcast that I've launched personally since March 2023. Young, and we're still puddling along. We're still excited. I'm still excited. I get passionate about talking to people like Atif today, and I get excited about recording another session. People know that. And I've got people telling me that they listen to me in the gym. I don't know why, but here, I appreciate wherever you come from the gym. If you want to listen to me on the road, it doesn't matter. I really appreciate you listening in and talking to us, exchanging ideas through social media. Atif, thanks a million for coming online.
A pleasure's all mine, Robin. It was an honor to be here.
Thanks, everybody, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks so much for listening in.
Thank you.